Well, thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos on the Mile High Show. You're listening to episode number 152. My conversation today is with Frank Malley, the director and actor, performer, producer over at PCA, the Prescott Center for the Arts. You can find out information on PCA at pca-az.net. The bulk of our conversation today revolved around his presentation of Fiddler on the Roof and his cast and how he got it there and where he came from and all that good stuff. Fiddler on the Roof is one of my all-time favorite musicals, one of my all-time favorite movies, stage plays. I don't see stage plays very often, but I have seen Fiddler a few times. We talk about that a little bit. And we talk about why that story of Tevye the Milkman is so universally known and loved. So sit back, enjoy my conversation with Frank Malley, and also joining us, it escapes me right now, the lighting tech and the fiddler himself. We talk for a few minutes there. All of our shows are available at milehighshow.com, along with a link to our sponsor, Amazon. So use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com for all your online shopping. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It will direct you to your normal Amazon or Amazon Prime login page. You log in like normal. Shop away. Doesn't cost you an extra dime, but it does give us a little thank you from Amazon every month. So please do that. Now, the episode was recorded at Prescott Center for the Arts in Prescott. I am currently recording this intro in the windy and shaded patio of Big Daddy E's Barbecue in Chino Valley. You can find out information on Big Daddy E's at bdebbq.com. Also follow them on Instagram and Twitter at BDEBBQ. The best barbecue you will find in the area, probably in the state or in your life. So come on down and stuff your face. Some of the great music, too. They're setting up right now. Leslie Earl Lyman has his posterior pointed at me as he's bending over, pulling out cords and setting up for tonight. Friday nights, 4 to 7 in the patio, weather permitting. 5? Well, that's just because you're here late. 5 to 7? Anyway, come on down, listen to some music and stuff your face, and enjoy my conversation with Frank Malley of the Prescott Center for the Arts. Again, pca-az.net, and Fiddler on the Roof runs from September 28th through October 15th. And another great play, Neil Simon's Lost in Yonkers, coming this January. pca-az.net is where you can find out information and pick up your tickets, and I will see you on stage. And I am sitting down with Frank Malley. Am I getting that right?
Malley.
Thanks for returning. We traded some messages on Facebook and emails and things, so I'm glad I was able to sit down and talk with you. Of course, the primary reason we're here is Fiddler on the Roof is opening on the 28th, I believe.
That's correct. We're less than 1 week away.
Let's let folks know where, because this will go up tonight, and it'll be there and forever until I die and forget to pay my hosting bill. But we want to kick this out and punch it out, and I'll get into why later. This is a play and a musical that's very dear to my heart. So when I saw it was coming up on the calendar, I really wanted to sit down and talk with somebody involved. So,
oh, that's great. You know, it's actually, to this very day, 50 years ago, Fiddler opened.
Really?
On Broadway.
Nice.
And it wasn't, it was a long, long journey to opening. Most of the cast had no idea that it was going to become this phenomenal, iconic, you know, Broadway record-busting, you know, hit. They just thought it was a modest little, you know, tale. And the creators were actually very personally involved in it, because that it's really the story of their grandparents.
Yeah,
and so it was a labor of love for them. It was an us that they wanted to do. It wasn't like someone else approached them for it. They eagerly sought after it.
What was the casting like? Do you for your knowledge of what it was 50 years ago? Who played the original Tevye?
Zero Mostel.
Yeah. Now from my history, I'm 51 now, so obviously this is before mine, and I remember, we'll get into it, but the reason this is really close to my heart, it was a great story that my parents loved, and when the movie version came out, it was the first non like Disney kids movie I ever went to when I was very little, and it made an impact. And then back then, before cable TV and everything, periodically, every few years, some of these major motion pictures would be re-released at the theater, long before VCRs and cable TV and all that. And whenever Fiddler would come out to the theaters again, we would go see it again.
Yep.
So it was one of those iconic movies for me as a child where, one, it was a grown-up movie. You know, obviously it was fun and it filled with emotion and music and crazy dancing and stuff.
Wonderful.
But for me, it wasn't a Bambi. It wasn't, you know, right. Herbie the Love Bug. Sure. It was an adult movie, the first I ever went to.
That's interesting because you said you saw it in your youth. Lin-Manuel
Hamilton.
Hamilton, creator. Yeah. He saw it in kindergarten. First time seeing it, and it had a lifetime lasting impression on him, to the point where for his wedding he surprised his wife with a huge L'Chaim production number that he got all these people from the cast to get involved in. It was just amazing. And afterwards he would, when he saw one of the creators came to production of Hamilton. And
the creators of the original Fiddler.
Of Fiddler.
Yeah.
Whether it was Sheldon Harnick or Jerry Brock, I'm not sure, Jerry Bach. But they came to the production, they went backstage, and they congratulated him on, you know. Uh-huh. And he said, he said, it was a great show. And Lin-Manuel said, well, it should be. We took all the best stuff from Fiddler. And he paused for a minute and said, you know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they took... So, because his first hit before Hamilton was In the Heights, story of growing up in Brooklyn. And he was explaining just how they basically ripped off Fiddler by taking the concept. They didn't have a fiddler open the show, but they had a graffiti artist who was the fiddler of their show.
Gotcha. Of the Heights.
Yes, a graffiti artist.
Nice.
And just as Tevye opens the show and introduces the community. He says, "Here's the butcher. Here's the matchmaker. Here's our beggar. Here's introduces the towns, the mamas, the papas, the sons." And in the same way, the graffiti artist in the Heights introduces the community,
neighborhood,
the hood.
Beautiful. So, I know the name of the production, and I've heard traits of about it, you know, with Hamilton being as huge as it is, but I don't know the history behind any of his earlier works.
Yeah, it was Into the Heights.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk real, get off track here
Fiddler.
As I start reminiscing about growing up. Tickets available, Prescott Center for the Arts, beautiful theater that we're sitting in right now.
Oh, yes, it's a historic Catholic Church, I think it was 1903.
Wow.
But it makes a wonderful theater.
And it's has the ability to look massive in the sense of the way you have I'm looking at the stage set right now, and it has expanse to it, but at the same time, very intimate. We're 12 rows, 15 rows up? What is the seat here?
194.
Really?
Yeah. Just under 200.
It has a way to give you that bigger stage feeling, but you're right on top of it. It's beautiful. It's very intimate. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it works really well.
So when's it going to run? What's the schedule?
The schedule is we open September 28th, which is a Thursday. We run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30. We have a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. And that runs through those weekends up through the October 15th.
Nice. This stage is, we're sitting in here, obviously, when it's, you know, there's not a production going on. But year-round, this is a constantly evolving stage. How long have you been involved with theater here in Prescott and in the Quad City area?
I've been here about 4.5 years now.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was, before we moved here, I told my wife, yes, looks great, sounds great. Her parents even lived here.
Oh, nice.
And but I said, we're not moving anywhere until I check out the theater.
The theater. Well, let's talk about that. What was hometown for you growing up? Where was your childhood?
I'm a Jersey boy.
Nice.
Yeah, about a half hour outside of New York City, little town, Linden, New Jersey.
Linden, New Jersey.
Linden, Elizabeth, Newark, and okay. New York.
Now, what? A lot of siblings, kids growing up. You solo?
I'm the middle child. Three boys.
What's the age difference?
Yeah. 4 years older and 4 years younger.
Now, I'm the youngest of six, five living, the youngest of six, but currently it's my oldest sister, then I'm at the end, and six kids. We are almost exactly 7 years apart. Oh. So there's not much space in between, but there's three brothers. It's the three of us, and we're all 3 years apart, and then my sisters are 3 years apart, so it was constantly on top of each other as kids.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, I don't, it was a small little three-bedroom home in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was packed. It was packed. So theater always of an interest to you? Give me a little of your history, the 90-second Reader's Digest version how Frank ended up in Prescott.
Theater was always an attraction as a junior high school.
Yeah.
I went out for the play, you know, the
what was it, high, do you remember?
It was called, I remember very well. It was called Inside a Kid's Head. And it was a scientific journey kind of a thing through the medulla oblongata and up and through.
You play?
It was like a three-character play. I was the kid who went, you know, on the tour of the brain.
The leading role at 12 years old. Nice.
And right after that, they started a community theater in our town in celebration of its 300th year anniversary. So they started a company called Theater 300. And I auditioned for that and got the role of Ito the houseboy in Auntie Mame. That was a trip. And then it just went on from there to high school, and then I majored in speech and drama in college. I took like a 40-year, absence to raise a family, and work. I worked in
which is theater in itself.
Tell me about it. But I was in the set construction special effects industry. It was just something that happened. I was actually trying to break in as a screenwriter actor. Wound up being a rep for set construction special effects companies
for stage production, movies, or wherever,
film and TV.
So L.A., was that where you ended
Hollywood,
up?
Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah.
We were the ones who did the sets for Star Trek.
Nice.
A lot of TV sitcoms, a lot of Super Bowl commercials.
I have
And several films.
I have a very good buddy of mine. He's retired now. He lives out in Paulden. And he was a set painter for a lot of years. Coach was one that he worked on. And he was one of his favorite sets to work on was the Black Hole for Disney back in the 70s. Frank Abril, he's been on the show before talking about his days on set and watching how the magic was made.
Oh yeah, that was my favorite part of the job, because I'd be able to go to all the sound studios and watch the things.
So you say you take a 40-year hiatus, but from performing and hands on, but you were still in the industry.
You know, it wasn't
was this part
did
of
I
that?
Say 40 years? It seems like 40.
So you stopped when you were 12, and you started again last year, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
But when you say that was from performing, but you're still in the industry in
well, you know,
the dramatic arts.
I hope to always be.
Yeah. Okay. You know,
whether it's in community theater
or
whatever.
So it wasn't like you walked out of a theater and then you took a job, you know, selling insurance. You still had your hands in the entertainment.
Oh, believe
pie.
Me. I actually gotcha. Did get my insurance license. Oh.
Pulled that out of a hat.
I mean, yeah.
So what were some of the, you mentioned Star Trek. What were some of the standout sets that you had a chance to work with or productions?
Oh, boy. Ah. Certainly the Star Trek, you know, going to the studio, it was right across the street there at Paramount. I was at Raleigh Studios. So, that would be a tough one. That's 25 years removed now.
Yeah. A lot of fun, though, watching the behind-the-scenes magic.
Oh,
yeah,
just loved it. Like I said, going to the sound stages and watching, like you say, the magic happen was just...
Any bad instances, anything that you that sticks out as, that wasn't what it was cracked up to be? No disasters that you were involved in? Any personalities that did not treat the help well?
My very first job, I mean, I had no idea what I was doing in the industry. Like I said, I was trying to break in as a screenwriter and an actor. A friend of mine had this idea that he wanted to start a set construction company, asked me if I'd make some calls for him. I said, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. You're the in...
sets and, you know, construction. But I said, hey, okay, I'll give it a shot. The first call, I get the production handbook, the Hollywood production handbook. The first call I made, I wound up at one of the studios, I forget which, doing a show that Christopher Reeve was his last appearance on TV. He was going to be the host of a new channel they were launching called Stars, STARZ.
Yeah.
It's still around today.
Yeah.
And they produce movies, you know, like HBO and stuff like that, but the lower tier. And I think 2 weeks later was when he had his accident. But it was real exciting being on that set with him and Jane Seymour. That was nice. Bette Midler parked her trailer at the Raleigh studio lot, and we got to be kind of chums.
What a blast, yeah.
So, yeah.
Very nice.
Some of the highlights there.
So what was the drive to come here to Prescott? What was it, the retirement out of Hollywood, or just change of pace, or what was your...
It's just the California, where we were even living in Ojai, California, just south of Santa Barbara. Inland a little bit from the ocean in Ventura, just 15 minutes away. But it was just, my wife had lived there for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And we were ready for a move. It was getting really crowded and real expensive. So we shopped around here and said, hey.
And she had family here already?
She had her mother and father here. Her mother has since passed away. Mm-hmm. And that was another reason for coming here, to be closer to her dad. But I lost my trend there.
How you ended up here, shopping around.
So we were comparative shopping and realized what we could get here compared to what we could get there. For the price, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that her dad was here, and you know, I had at that time checked out the theater, and so he said, let's go.
What productions? Did you come in as a writer? What's the process for you to get involved with the theater? You yourself.
When I first got here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it was very fortuitous. I had been doing, in addition to acting and directing at the Ojai Theater, I was involved in. I was doing ad sales for the theater, for their programs. It just so happened, when I moved here, the guy who had been doing it for the last 12 years just said he's not doing it anymore. Yeah. And they and when I found that out, he said, "Oh, okay." So I walked into
that. I can keep
the
lights on.
I walked into that, and I tried out for my first show. I was hoping to get a chorus part, you know, and I wound up with, you know, one of the featured parts. Even had a solo or two.
What production was this?
That was Promises, Promises. Mm-hmm. The music by Burke Bacharach. Very difficult music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of not quite Sondheim, but, you know, difficult.
How did... How long have you been directing? Because you're directing Fiddler, which starts up next week.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Is that... And as a non-theater person, as just a fan of productions and movies and the like, the connection between the performers and the directors isn't always clear for us on the outside looking in. What's the connection? Does it benefit you as a director to have spent time as an actor, and vice versa? Does it benefit you as an actor to know what it's like to be a director?
Yeah, I think every director can benefit from having acting experience,
yeah.
No doubt about it. I know when I'm directing, I always remember what it feels like to be an actor mm-hmm. out there. And so when I'm, for instance, when I'm giving notes, I'm very conscious of, you know, how it can be perceived. It can be taken very personal.
Mm-hmm.
It can get defensive because I've been there, you know. And also as a director actor, when I read the script through in preparation for the rehearsals, I kind of try to embody myself or picture myself in the different characters'
in the
roles.
Yeah.
And so that way I can more emphasize with the characters and feel what the characters feel and get some ideas to give to the actors, whether they want to take it or not and run
yeah.
with it. That's their choice. So I do appreciate directors who give me lots of leeway, especially in the early stages of rehearsals, to come up with, you know, things to do, little businesses sometimes,
mm-hmm.
or offer suggestions. I love when an actor comes and, you know, brings things to the table and will offer suggestions.
Yeah.
And saying, well, what about if we try it this way? Oh, yeah, well, that's interesting. But what I was thinking was maybe more along this lines. And more often than not, they're right.
Hmm.
And I say, go for it.
Now, when you're working with, say, an original production or a script that was generated in-house, because I know there are some playwrights here at the Center for the Arts, and they have workshops where they do original stuff, as opposed to an iconic musical like Fiddler or any others that are presented here. How much leeway as a performer and as a director do you have to make adjustments and different interpretations of things?
You mean to the script itself?
Either the script or the way a character is portrayed, or because as an audience member, we kind of come in expecting, or not expecting, but anticipating a role to be played a certain way, with a certain feel to it. How much do you play with that, or do you, or do you try and stick to the canon as it's known?
Well, I try to let the actors,
mm-hmm.
you know, develop their own interpretation. A good example, I guess, would be with this show, Fiddler on the Roof. Mm-hmm. You have the lead character of Tevye, which everybody
yeah.
is familiar with, especially the Topol film version mm-hmm. character. And you know, there would be a tendency to, you know, drift towards.
Yeah.
That characterization. And I'm all about letting the actor flavor it with some of that, but it has to be his own.
Yeah.
And make it his own.
As opposed to doing...
Director and every actor would want to do that.
As opposed to doing an impression of Topol, that kind of thing. So
correct.
Really make it
yeah.
their own.
And as far as original things, original works, they do have the Young Playwrights Festival mm-hmm. here every year. which I was fortunate enough to be involved in as a director for two of them since I've been here. And so that's an ongoing yearly thing, and it's real exciting for these young kids. I mean, young kids, grade school, junior high school, you know, and high school, coming up with these 10-minute, you know, plays with beginning, middle, and end, and works.
Nice.
Great.
Nice.
I also produced an original work here in our smaller stage. In addition to this facility, there's what we call our black box theater, or stage two, T-O-O. Down the, we say it's down the alley, the fourth dumpster on your left.
Nice, nice. How does...
But that show, by the way, was called, was by Kimberly Denmary, called Seatbelts Required, about three sisters meeting for the first time after many years, and they're not... did not get along at their mother's funeral. And so the story brings out their dysfunctional, you know, past, and they resolve it over the course of the evening, only after going through an emotional roller coaster ride that they put the audience through. It's currently being made into a film.
Beautiful.
And it was very well received here when we did it a couple of years ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. How does the marriage come about between the work and the director? I mean, do you come and say, you know, this is what I want to produce, this is what I want to direct? Or
They do have a play submission process here where you submit plays that you're interested in directing or perhaps not directing.
What was the case with Fiddler?
I had submitted Fiddler as one that I would love to direct.
Why? What drew you to it? And have you done it before?
I have not done it before, and the only production of it I saw was a high school production, an extremely well done high school production. But no, I had never seen it. I had seen the movie, of course, and I loved the movie. It's just so rich.
Yeah.
If I were a rich man. I could be
going to break into song?
The songs.
Yeah.
You know, if the songs don't get you, the dances will.
Yeah.
You know, and the dances don't get you. There's no way the dances won't get you. There's no way the songs don't get you. This is the only show I know that comes out with three incredible production numbers, like within the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, we open up with the big tradition number, which is a full company production number. And just a rousing number, just gives you goosebumps.
Yeah.
Then we follow that by the matchmaker, you know, sweet number. And then right after that, on top of that, Tevye comes out with If I Were a Rich Man. Now, the original title of that was taken from the whole Fiddler on the Roof was adapted from the original stories of Sholem Aleichem.
Yeah.
In
Tevye the Milkman.
Yeah, Tevye the Milkman.
There's great collections of those. Hey, I'm going to drop in a commercial here. Great collections of those old stories that you can pick up at our local libraries, which is where I was reviewing one. Oh, it's been a couple of years now out of the Yavapai County Library System. But you can also go on Amazon and purchase those books by using the Amazon link right there at milehighshow.com. Okay, commercial's over because I get a little thank you from Amazon.
Absolutely.
If you use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. I have seen Fiddler performed live a few different times. Through my work with media in the San Francisco Bay Area, I would cover a lot of high school productions and things. And some good, some not so good. One, this has got to be 25, maybe 30 years ago. Castro Valley High School in the San Francisco East Bay, east of Oakland, put on one of the best, not just productions of Fiddler, but one of the best productions I have ever seen. And it was a high school production, and they used the high school band as the orchestra to play every number. And it was incredible. An incredible cast, and incredible production. Just the way they did it. And typically, you don't see that cooperation, that partnering of live music and stage play at the high school level. It's just, you don't see it. They use recorded stuff, and the way they presented it just blew me away, and the talent they had. I have no idea who was involved in it, but it was about 25, 30 years ago in Castro Valley High School, and it was incredible. I actually got a chance to see Topol on stage in San Francisco reprise his role. Mid-80s, I think. Mm-hmm. I want to say the Orpheum Theater. It could have been the Golden Gate. But we went to a matinee and then that evening's performance as well. And it was a little family went. It was
That's
beautiful.
A full day.
No, it was, again, this is a movie and a story that has been, for some reason, the Jewish struggle in Eastern Europe really hit home with my Mexican American mom and Portuguese father. So
when this play has such universal appeal,
I wanted to talk about that. What is that?
I'll tell you what it is.
Tradition.
Yeah, it is.
Family.
Yeah.
Community. Identity. Devotion. But when it was played in Japan, when they took the touring, mm-hmm. they toured all over the world with this, and everywhere was equally well received, ecstatically received. So much so that after the performance, when they did it in Japan, the Japanese prime minister came up to the producers and said, he asked them, do they understand this play in America?
Yeah.
And they said, well, yeah, well, why do you ask? Of course they do. He said, but because it's so Japanese.
It's so universal. That's beautiful.
And then when it was out of town, before opening on Broadway, they took it to Detroit and Washington. And while it was in Detroit, the sister superior of some Catholic organization ordered 250 tickets for a year from now. A year from then, I mean.
Yeah.
Because that's when their convention was or something. Yeah. And the guy said, are you sure you want to buy tickets that far in advance? Do you think it's going to run that long? And she said, are you kidding? This will run forever.
Yeah. And it's still running.
And it's still running.
Like it will be
it's
next week.
It's been revived
week.
Every decade.
Yeah. Like,
what to speak of being produced in all these community theaters and high schools.
Yeah.
And Sunrise, Sunset has lived, throughout all this time in weddings. I mean, it's not a wedding without Sunrise, Sunset.
Unfortunately, at some point in the 80s and 90s, Kool and the Gang Celebration kind of knocked Sunrise.
Oh, did it?
I did a lot of wedding photography. Sunrise, it's just such beautiful words, such beautiful music.
Yeah.
And again, it's universal. It affects every culture because the struggles are the old guard, the new guard.
The refugees from the Middle East.
And what timing, too, when you think of the story of the patriarch trying to hold on to the tradition and the younger generation, the kids branching off and breaking away somewhat from tradition but still having those ties, and the upheaval of the cultural revolutions that were going on in the story from Sholem Aleichem, from when were they penned?
Late
1800s. And then the play hitting Broadway in 67, 68, whenever?
64. 54,
64?
64 it opened on Broadway.
So
50 years ago today.
Well, no,
we're talking about...
You're making me too old now. 50, because I'm 51. I was born in 66. So it's older than... Yeah. This is 2017.
Yeah.
We're going to have to break... So 50 years ago was 67. We'll have to Wikipedia it.
maybe it isn't 50 years, but it is. No, it opened in 1964. So
nice.
However many 50.
Oh, no, so that was 55.
It's 55 years.
55, yeah. I don't know. Don't ask me to count. I take pictures get, and talk, you know, on my...
Let me get back to Zero Mostel, if I may.
Yes, please.
Because I was just reading about him. He was an incorrigible prankster.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, drive actors and producers nuts. And it wound up getting him... So they didn't renew his contract.
Really?
Which blew him away. Because he thought Fiddler was his.
Yeah.
You know, and when it first came out, the preview reviews were saying, it's Fiddler's kind of ordinary in every way, except for Zero Mostel, who's extraordinary.
Yeah.
So it became like they didn't know whether the show would work without Zero.
Hmm.
But it came to find out that it worked just well because it's the show and not Zero. But no, getting back to his antics, he would when his back would be turned to the audience, he would make faces trying to crack up the other actors. Actors who were wearing fake beards, you know, he'd pull on them during the show. There's one scene with the constable who's like the blue meanie who comes in and gets an edict to perform the massacres, the slaughters, the pogroms against the village. And he has this one scene where he's coming to warn Tevye because they actually kind of, in reading the original stories, this constable and Tevye grew up as kind of friends.
Hmm.
And then he went over to the Russian side.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, Darth Vader. But so he came to warn Tevye and said, you know, I got to do this, but I'm going to get you, you know, let you know in advance. And so he has this little scene and he takes off. And Mostel did this shtick where he starts to strangle himself as if he's strangling the constable. And he starts crossing his eyes and the kids starting getting laughs. So he hams it up even more and keeps the strangling going, throws himself on the floor and kicking his legs and, you know, coughing and going on. Then he gets up and pretends he has a shovel and he's pretending he's shoveling that he's digging dirt and he's digging a grave.
Yeah.
And then he takes the constable that he was strangling. He throws him on the ground and he throws him into the grave that he dug, you know, and pantomiming it, and then starts shoveling the dirt back on top of him and then jumping on his grave. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you wouldn't know what to expect from him. And some of the actors were not particularly pleased with that.
Interesting. Now, I had known that he originated the role. Have never seen any clips or anything. I don't know if there's anything that exists of him on. I guess that's a Google and a YouTube. But I know my knowledge of Mostel is you know, the producers. What was that other 12 Chairs, I think, was a movie, Mel Brooks film he was in. I know him from the silly, goofy, great actor, but comedic actor. And while there is humor in Fiddler, it's not a shticky kind of a play. And so I think it would be interesting to see him do this, you know, if there's any film of that available or any clips, it'd be interesting to see, because that's out of what I know him of for, and it'd be interesting.
You know,
to see.
I actually think he was nominated for an Academy Award for a film he did,
really,
in the '40s, late '40s or so. I think I recall that from my research.
Nice. Talk a little bit about the cast here.
Oh,
who do we have?
Oh,
what treats are is this theater
I'm telling
audience
you,
in store
this
for?
Is a this yeah. This cast is a dream cast, you know, director's dream cast, beginning with star of the show, Tevye.
Yeah.
The dairyman. Played by Daryl Rowder. You know, Daryl is conductor of the Prescott Pops here and very involved in other choral groups. He was the lead in Les Mis here, Les Miserables, three years ago, which I was fortunate to be in that show
nice.
Well. But he played Jean Valjean, and he was just phenomenal. And so to be able to get him in the lead of this show was a real coup. Michelle Grubert plays Golda, his wife, an amazing singer, actress, and mother of three other cast members in the show.
Oh,
yeah,
her
three daughters are all in the show playing three of Tevye's daughters. And they're all remarkable. Sophia Grubert playing Huddle, Lily Grubert playing Chava, and Gianna Grubert playing Sprinza.
Oh, wow. What a legacy to have in that family.
So just to have that the whole family in here, in the cast, is really, you know, what distinguishes community theater from...
Yeah.
I'm much fonder of community theater than I am of professional theater just because of things like that.
Yeah.
And I have another mother and daughter combo.
Nice.
Her two daughters, Donna Olson, and her daughters, Grace Olson and Hope, Grace and Hope. So, yeah, it's just been, it's great in that way to get the whole family involved. I have one, speaking of the daughters, I have one of the youngest daughter, Saba Sherman, who is brand new to the theater. And has just taken to it like anything. Her parents are just thrilled with the way she's responded to it, and it's given her a lot more self confidence and just something exciting to look forward to.
Nice.
And she's totally into it. And so again, that's what makes community theater so special. The constable that we were talking about earlier is played by James Pidock, phenomenal actor and director in his own right.
That name sounds familiar.
Now, he was the drama teacher at Bradshaw High School.
Gotcha, okay.
For, many, many years, if not 20 or more. Recently retired. And so I was always hoping to have an opportunity to work with him, having seen him when I first arrived here in Lion in Winter. He played King Henry II, a part which I had played as well back in my Ojai days.
Nice.
Oh, God, but I love being king. That's my favorite line, I think, of all the shows I've done.
Nice. Now, talk a little bit about the process. Now, I became aware of the production, the Fiddler production that's coming up, going to be starting on the 28th and running through most of October.
October 15th.
When the theater and those that are heading the theater were posting up on social media and that the casting calls, what type of process is that? And who are you as a director and the theater, who are you looking for when you put out a casting call like that for future productions? I'm thinking, you mentioned this young lady, this is her first production. The theater community here in the area with the inclusion of Chino Valley has a very strong theater program. Bradshaw obviously does, so does Prescott, and then of course the citizens, the non-students who are very active in the theater community. Often people will think, well, I'm not in that, I don't have any, I've never been in a production before. Are you looking for only folks with experience, and if not, what are you looking for?
Yeah, no, it's amazing because I've seen it where somebody who had absolutely no experience come in and audition, and against seasoned performers, and get the role. Sometimes it's just an intangible thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but more often, a director's looking for certain qualities that he envisions for the role, and he's looking to see who can best, you know, bring those qualities to the stage. But then it's tricky because there are some actors who cannot for the life of them do a decent audition for whatever reason, whether it's nerves or not preparing.
Kind of like job interviews. Some people are horrible on job interviews. Yeah,
but then performance-wise, they deliver. But by the time opening night comes, you got a rock-solid performance out of them. And the opposite is also
I was going to say, other way?
You get some guy or gal or some person come in and like nail it.
Blow you away on the audition.
You know, I don't need to see anybody. I don't need to see anybody else. You got the role, that kind of thing. And then that's all they ever
that's all they got.
Yeah, that's it. And it happened one time I cast a British sex farce called Funny Money by Ray Cooney. He's kind of the Neil Simon of Britain. And I cast this gentleman. And little did I know at that time that he was like 75 years old. He's playing a character about 50, would be stretching it. But he just didn't. I said, after a few weeks of rehearsal, I said, what was the last show you did? He said, oh, I've never done a show. I said, he said, I've done radio.
Gotcha.
I'm a radio performer. And I do plays on radio. And he had his own. He hosted his shows, and so he wound up just totally not being able to memorize his lines.
Yeah,
he couldn't memorize his blocking. He didn't know where he was at which time, where he was supposed to be. I had it. He got so bad that all the actors were making up lines in case he forgot his line because they. They couldn't count on him knowing his line at any given time. So I had actors writing up lines so they don't, you know, look like fools on stage.
Something to play off of.
I had my tech guy rig up an earpiece for the guy and my stage manager so that she could feed him his lines. Not only feed him his lines, but tell him his blocking. And blocking was crucial in this play because it was all about two briefcases up. And if they're not in the right place, it throws the whole payoff.
Oh, wow.
You know, just... So eventually I had to, you know, the actor was saying, can you please just get somebody, you know, take the role yourself, anything. I finally had to take the role.
Yeah.
5 days before we opened. And so I just did nothing else but listen to... fortunately, he had recorded his lines on a tape recorder. Mm-hmm. So I just listened to that ad nauseum.
Flip side of that. Somebody here? Come on over. Flip side of that. Somebody who... you weren't sure about, and then once the curtains was raised, you were blown away.
Oh, this guy right here.
This guy?
let's see.
Anything stick out?
Yeah, there was one gal that in a show I did back at Stage 2 again, back in the
down by the dumpster?
Yeah, exactly. That was Sylvia, a play about the relationship of a man and his best friend. But his best friend was the dog, but played by a very foxy woman. And so it becomes a love triangle between the wife and the dog and the husband. And this was a gal I cast who was relatively inexperienced. I think she had one show under her belt. But she wound up with just a sensational tour de force performance.
Nice.
That was just hysterical and very moving and very touching.
Again, let's let folks know you've got the card there. Just go off where folks can get tickets.
Yes.
When does it start? How long does it run?
Fiddler on the Roof at Prescott Center for the Arts, September 28th through October 15th. Tickets are available at our box office, 928-445-3286, and online at pca-. AZ.net.
Is that the horse that throws the shoe in the barn there?
Yeah, it is. Yes. This is my lighting operator, and this is Nathan, the fiddler, if you want to get any...
If they've got a minute, before I...
You want to play a little fiddler? We can end it with a little fiddler music.
Before we go, if I can, just... obviously, this was one that you brought, that you suggested. Is there any play that you have not, any production that you have not been involved with that would be the pinnacle? What's the one out there? What's your white whale that you wish you could
Man of La Mancha.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'd love to play the title role.
Yeah. Well, great.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list.
Is this our fiddler? Would you like to?
This is Nathan Wiggins. Yes, and he's playing the fiddler, and he's doing a sensational job. He opens and closes the show, actually.
You want to come over and say a word or two? No?
This is Thanks, a podcast, Frank. Nathan.
Oh, okay.
Just talk about your involvement with the production. What drove you to throw your hat in the ring? Or did they approach you? Are you the sought-out fiddler violinist for the area that they just couldn't do the production without?
Well, actually, no one knows or knew that I did play the violin.
Really?
I've been in several productions here, and I've been playing violin since first grade, and in ninth grade, Fiddler on the Roof was a production that they wanted me to play, and I never got to for one reason or another. I don't know why. And so when this came up, I thought, you know what? I'll just try it. And I hadn't played for 20 years. And
really?
So I've had to really hunker down and start practicing every day and kind of to get back to where I was.
Now, you started, you said, in first grade?
Mm-hmm.
Where was first grade? Where'd you grow up?
First grade would be at Madrona School in Torrance, California.
Nice. Southern Cal. Was that home for you for... quite a
up
while.
Until about second grade or so.
Oh, okay.
And then I moved to Northern California after that.
Oh, whereabouts?
Willits. Yeah.
I grew up in Hayward, just south of Oakland.
Yeah.
And my mom, first my sister moved up to Laytonville.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom joined her and my brother after a while in Laytonville and,
small town.
Yeah, what was the other? Round Valley, I think? Like east of that area?
I don't remember east.
Covelo.
Oh, yeah.
Covelo, up there.
Right.
My brother worked for...
Cloverdale?
Yeah.
Okay.
My brother was up there for a number of years before he moved to Prescott, which brought me here eventually. But he worked at the only auto repair shop in Laytonville for a number of years. So anybody that broke down up there on their way to wherever knew my brother. So,
cool.
But yeah, Willits was a neat little town. I liked that area.
Then I moved to Santa Rosa, and then... Yeah. Kind of Santa Rosa was my place for quite some time. So
now I, in my elementary school in Hayward, Pomacia, the Panthers, I think, they didn't offer music to the students until third grade. That was the first time you were able to participate. And when they announced that, when I was in third grade, I have no idea why I wanted to play the saxophone. I just wanted to. I don't know why. I begged my parents. And it took several days of me begging and pleading, no. Finally, he said, okay, fine, go. Gave me the permission slip, and I had waited too long because I was begging. They had no saxophones left, so I said, okay, well, how about guitar? No, out of guitar, out of this. What do you have left? He said, the violin. I said, no, thanks, and I go home. My dad goes, where's your instrument? I said, well, all they had was violin left. He goes, well, go get it. You begged us. You're going to play something. So in third grade, I was tasked with learning violin. And our first production was about 5 weeks out. And I was horrible, and I didn't want to play, and I fought it. I wanted to quit. And my parents says, no, you begged us to play. You're going to play. And then the weekend, we were going to do our performance. I want to say it was like on a Tuesday night. So that Saturday, my dad made me bring out my violin to practice for him. He had yet to hear me play. And I played for him for about 5 minutes, and he said, okay, you can quit. You're allowed to quit.
Yeah.
So I never quite mastered more than getting it out of the case and rosining up the bow, I think was the best I ever did.
I think
did.
That's actually most people's experiences, believe it or not. So.
Now, having said all that, I've never been able to play an instrument. I've never taken lessons or anything, and I don't think I have the discipline or the patience for it, but I really wish that I would have learned some sort of musical ability. I struggle to play a CD in the car. That's the limit of mine.
I see. That's your musical ability.
And I struggle with that. It's not my biggest talent.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sitting down.
Yeah,
could you play a little tune that we can...
play a little bit of the theme if you want.
Yeah, I'll hold this for you and crank it up a little. I'm going to turn mine down. And we'll turn yours up a little bit.
Jean Lippincott, and I'm a director at PCA, and I do just about everything else, and I'm running lights, doing the light tech
for Fiddler,
and I'm having a ball.
How long have you been involved with the theater here?
Since 1999.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is Prescott home for you?
Yeah,
or?
It is now.
What was home before that?
Los Angeles.
L.A.?
Yeah, I'm one of the California people invading.
Me too. I was up Northern California, outside of, smack dab between Oakland and San Jose.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have family. I have my kids in Vacaville, so.
My sister lives there.
Oh, yeah.
Vacaville or Sassoon. I forget. She's, right on the border.
Right.
She's right next to the... not too far from Jelly Belly.
Yeah, right.
So that's
pretty area.
So what brought you to Prescott?
Retirement. My husband wanted to get out of L.A., and he wanted to move to a hot place like Phoenix, and I wanted to move to someplace that was cooler.
Yeah.
And so we found Prescott and had a good arts community, visual arts and performing arts community.
Now, you said you were retired. What did you retire from?
I was a psychologist. I had a private practice in psychology, and he was...
it's a whole different form of theater.
Yeah, but I tell you, it's good to be a psychologist when you're a director.
How does that help you? Let's delve into that.
Of get to know some of the dynamics and the characteristics and how to work with people when they're, they're struggling and their egos are kind of frail. And
egos in the theater?
They can get wounded a lot because, you're just kind of opening up and everything is hanging out there and for the world to see. So, yeah, it gets dicey sometimes, but I enjoy it.
How has the theater, you said 99?
Uh-huh.
How has the theater here at Prescott Center for the Arts changed in your time here?
Drastically.
In what ways?
Well, we're improving the productions, trying to make them more professional. We are considered a professional community theater because of our budget. We have the money to do some of the things more professionally. We're doing more training now for actors and directors and... just trying to do sets better, tech better, really trying to improve all the aspects of theater. And it's working. And we've got a wonderful executive director now who's worked in theater
for
25 years. That's Robin Allen.
I met her down on the steps.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
We want to shine the light on, literally shine the light. You're the lighting person on this. But we want to highlight the ones that are making this the thriving theater it is, so I'm glad you mentioned her name.
There's quite a few people. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that work positively to get this turned into... But we've got a lot of good talent here.
Yes.
And we don't always push the talent to do their best, and that's what we're trying to do now.
And what's the best way for the community, the surrounding area? And when I say surrounding area, I'm including Phoenix, I'm including Flag, because to come up here, people often come up here for music or events on the square.
Yeah.
We want to make sure they're coming up for the dramatic arts as well. What's the best way for folks to support the theater community here?
Just come up and come to a show and go back and tell everybody how great it is. You know, it's a great town all year round.
Yeah.
In the spring, it's beautiful and blooming, and in the summer, it's cooler, and in the winter, it's just...
the dusting of snow
fun,
on the courtyard.
And then we get all the people, and people come up, and I think our rates for hotels and motels around are very reasonable. Mm-hmm. Come up and stay, and while you're here, Take a night or an afternoon and go to the theater.
Or do a day trip and come up for the matinee, grab some dinner and head home.
I have a lot of friends in Phoenix that have done that, actually. Come up and either meet me for lunch and then we do a matinee or... No.
What's on the horizon? What's on the horizon here for you? What's your next one to be involved with?
Well, I'm involved in a play called Fat Pig, which is going to be put on in Stage 2. That's our small theater.
Yes. Down by the dumpster, he told me.
Down by the dumpster, second door past the dumpster. And I am actually stage managing and helping, mentoring the new director who is is doing that play. And Fat Pig sounds kind of funny, but it's going to be a great play. Then I am directing Doubt after that. And do you know of
No.
Doubt was...
I know next to nothing about anything, so educate me.
Doubt was a Tony Award-winning play by John Patrick Shanley. And it was also made into a movie with Meryl Streep. And it's about a very rigid nun who's a mother superior at a school who suspects a priest of molesting a young boy. And it's set in 1964, so it's before all this stuff started becoming...
So this is a heavy...
It's heavy, and it's got a lot of layers to it, and it's kind of an actor's play because the roles are wonderful, but... Audiences have loved it, so I'm really excited to do that. And then I'm going to go out for a role in Comedy of Errors, which is going to be put on here in the main stage. And I don't know if I'll get that, but, you know, that should be fun. That's Shakespeare, so.
Nice. Now, who's the boss? I saw you came in here with somebody.
Oh, the boss? That's Kelly. She's my Bernese Mountain Dog.
Nice.
And she hasn't been on stage yet.
No?
No, but she's a little puppy still.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to coming out and catching a performance.
Oh, good.
I talked with Frank about this. For some reason, Fiddler has been ingrained in my brain since childhood.
Oh.
And it's a production my family had gone to see multiple times in the movie.
Are you Jewish?
No,
I'm not either, but I love it. Yeah,
and that's kind of what we had talked about, the story and the struggles of the family and the community are universal.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
every culture has those trying to hold on to the traditions of the parents and the grandparents as the younger generation branches out but still can't quite let
go. And I, this performance is going to be excellent. We've got some professional quality performances. Most of them are going on here, and the costuming is beautiful. The lighting is beautiful.
That's what I wanted. It's just clicking now. Frank talked about the cast and the performance. You're working behind the stage. Obviously,
I'm working up there at the top. At the top. I'm God
behind the scenes, I think. But how is the support staff, the performers, if you will, that aren't seen by the audience?
I think it's excellent. We've got a great stage manager who's not feeling well and is still on top of her game. So, you know, she's just acting like a real pro. We've got a costumer I just don't believe the costume she's put together. And we've got the lighting designer. The lighting design is wonderful. I'm just running what somebody else has designed, but you know, I still have to make sure everything gets done right. It's a job. I'm on top of it all the time. The music director, I think, is the best we've ever had here.
Very nice.
The choreographers, the dance captain, I don't think there's anybody that's not doing their job here. They're just on, they're excited about the show. They're all working together, and it's nice. It's nice to be here.
Frank, if I could ask you one more question in the middle of your juice break there. Talking about costumes and things, do you have a preference of directing a period piece or a modern day piece? Do you fun in both? Do you have a, what would you say to?
I definitely have fun in both, but I love costume dramas and period pieces. I just love to recreate. My favorite subject in high school was, and you know, throughout all of school, was history.
Yeah.
And so I love doing the research and finding out the history and the zeitgeist of the time, and just bringing the flavor of the period is just really
As long as your Tevye doesn't start pulling beards like Zero Mostel.
Yeah.
Let's go back. What, you've been involved in the theater here for years. What,
18, what's, 19 years
what's
now.
What's the most 18. Involved, like, as far as costuming and things, period pieces that you've seen perform or that you've taken part in, either observed or participated
oh,
in?
Oh, gosh, you throw that at me like this. I'm getting so old. I'm getting too old to think back. This is one that's very one, involved, yeah. And I'm trying to think. They're all. I mean, our musicals are usually yeah. period pieces.
Yeah.
We did Carousel, beautiful costumes on Carousel. That was a big costume. Oh, what?
Well, Carousel, wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that like kind of Western wear, right? Wasn't it?
No, that was no? in it was in Boston what area.
What am I thinking? Oklahoma, I guess.
Oklahoma. And, okay. Yeah, we haven't done that.
Because I was going to say, you don't, you could just tell them to come as they are here in Prescott.
Yeah.
No, we don't need a costume director. Just wear what you wore to work today.
But we've done some pretty big productions here, and I'd have to think back a minute, but yeah.
But this one's pretty
involved. This one's very involved. This is
very nice.
A lot of costuming.
Well, thanks for your time. We'll let you go, and
you're welcome.
And I'm looking forward to it. Thank
thanks.
You again.
I'm glad you're going to see it.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was it. That was episode 152, all done, with Frank Malley, the director of this season's Fiddler on the Roof at the Prescott Center for the Arts, pca-az.net. And look forward to more stuff from the Center for the Arts. It's a great theater community there in Prescott and the surrounding areas. They put on some great shows. And Fiddler on the Roof coming up next week. Lost in Yonkers by Neil Simon coming up January 25th through February 4th. Again, pca-az.net is where you can find out information. And as always, stop by Big Daddy's Barbecue in Chino Valley for the best barbecue you will find and some of the greatest musicians in the area performing from 5 to 7 on Friday nights, weather permitting, out there in the patio. What else? Oh, use the Amazon link so I don't have to go to your house and borrow money. Thanks for listening. Beautiful, beautiful.